providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Adrian Day, as we did focus a bit more on the resource and commodity sector and the sell-off that we saw today. In these next two segments, I am chatting with Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies, writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors. That's read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. He also has a retail newsletter called In the Know Trader, and also a relatively newer newsletter called 7-Eleven, where Rick picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs. Now, Rick, let's talk big picture here and focus a bit more on U.S. equity markets first, post-Fed. Now, look, the Fed came out with a statement that I guess was a little more hawkish, but really all they said was they are thinking about talking about raising rates, and quite frankly, the dot plot changed, but it changed about 2 years out. So again, it's hard to predict month over month, let alone 2 years down the road. The interesting thing, though, is we saw a bit of selling creep into every market, but it seems like the U.S. equity markets are withstanding that selling pressure almost better than any other sector or market within the U.S. Rick, how's that happening? Why are the U.S. markets withstanding this slightly more hawkish Fed?
Well, Corey, I think you've got a couple of issues here that need to be addressed. One you touched on, which is the Fed spoke about possibly raising rates 2 years out in two of the quarters, and which the market wasn't looking for based upon the last Fed statement. However, I think Jay Powell was kind of smart in how he did this, because he presented this as the possibility that 2 years out there may be some rise in Fed funds rates. And there's no changes now. They're holding things at 0% or between 0.25%. This, I think, was kind of cleverly done as nothing changing for now, but a couple years out, things may be different. And along that, he said inflation was higher for this year than the Fed had expected. So let's start with that. The Fed is known historically and notoriously for being behind the curve. What I mean by that is being behind what the market knows. So the market has priced in inflation going back as early as, I'd say, last September or so. Investors started leaning towards positioning themselves for inflation down the road. And we've been telling our institutional clients since last September that investors have shifted towards an outlook for inflation. The Fed has not addressed what the market kind of felt like was coming. Interest rates, obviously, on the long end had moved up significantly from last fall. And the U.S. 10-year got to, I think, 1.76 or so was the high of the move, sitting now at 1.45. But the marketplace expected rates to move higher because of inflation. And the Fed kept saying, we're not really concerned about inflation, until this last meeting where they said, you know what, yeah, it is higher than we expected it to be by a significant amount. What's gone on since Wednesday, especially on the yield side, is first a quick move up to, I don't know, what was it, 160 or so, 1.6, and then right back down. So there is a movement here in buying bonds, and part of this, I think, is flight to safety, with stocks looking a little iffy, and we'll get to the stock market in a second. But bond yields are just a tad lower than they were on the lows in March, which I think got to 1.47, and now we're at 1.4, actually right now we're at 1.44, or 4.5. So, we're kind of right there. If we break further then yields can go down to 138, 128. And if we really had more of a decline in yields, and I'd love it to happen because if I had the chance to be able to get to sell bonds back with yields beneath 1.2%, I'd be a very happy camper. And I'd relish the opportunity to be able to get that to happen. So for, you know, your listeners, my view is if yields really fell another 20 basis points, 25 basis points, I think that's your last chance you're going to get to sell bonds. And then rates will ultimately make their way higher. So to me, I am a bond bear. And it's just a matter of, you know, of course, like anything else in these markets, timing the best time to put that trade on. But with the high that we have in place at earlier this year in March, which was accompanied by a DeMarc sequential upside exhaustion signal. So, you know, we've kind of been in the camp that rates were going to stall. And now that they've pulled back, good, let them pull back more. And then, you know, I'll probably sell out of all bonds I own, any mutual funds, any type bond funds I have. You get me down near 1.25%, and then that's it. I'm done with bonds. I don't think we're going back to 1% or anything like that.
Rick, let me jump in here. Does that mean that the whole defensive trade, you're not buying into that? Or should bonds not be looked at as a defensive trade in this environment?
Well, I think bonds are always going to be looked at as an alternative. They're not necessarily, look, for 30 years, you made money buying bonds. I think that's done with. So putting money into the bond market now is simply a hedge about really being exposed to other markets, most especially the stock market, but it could be some other markets too. So to me, bonds are a place to park money where you don't think you're going to get your rear end handed to you. However, that is more of a short-lived type thing because I think bonds are done on the downside. You know, we got to, I don't know, 40 basis points or so. I think it was last summer. That's the bottom. And we, you know, we made a good bounce up. We're correcting some of it. The marketplace has been short bonds for a while now because a good portion of Wall Street was expecting rates to go higher, and they did. But, you know, we've gone nowhere in the bond market basically since mid-March. And now there's only so long you go sideways before one of the two sides of that trade starts to feel some pain. And in this case, you know, people who are short bonds are feeling some pain. And, you know, yields have backed up as there's a little bit of a short squeeze. If the short squeeze continues, good. Let people come in and buy bonds as their hedge against what's going on elsewhere. I don't think bonds are a good long-term investment any longer. And I've been saying that for a while. And at this point, just it's a matter of where you want to come in to, from my view, sell out of your bonds for good, because we should be in a higher interest rate environment for the next several years. So to me, you know, the bull market, the 30-year bull market is done.
Okay, let's carry that over to the stock market then. What do you think about the markets? Again, withstanding this slightly more hawkish Fed and the sell-off in a lot of other markets, but not so much still. U.S. equity markets are very close to all-time highs.
Yeah, I mean, it was just Monday of this week, Corey, that the S&P notched a new high from, you know, just barely above last Friday's high. So even though we've had a pretty lousy week in the market, we've had both today and Wednesday were significant down days. We're still only about, you know, just over a percent and a half from all-time highs. So in S&P terms, the market has still held up. So I don't have any major concerns yet. From a pure tactical point of view, the first support level is right near today's low. It's 41.78. Today's low is 41.72. As we speak, the market's at 41.86. So we have bounced even from that level. Bigger level to be concerned about is breaking under 41.40. and doing so properly. So we kind of have some filters that we use to help determine if a breakdown or a breakout is real as compared to just market noise. And even though in the month of May, multiple days we were beneath 4140, none of those days were set up the correct way, such that, you know, we really weren't concerned, and the market turned around and made new all-time highs. So I'd still use kind of that 41. Let me see what the actual number is. It's 41.43. You've got to break beneath it properly. If you want to know how to break beneath it properly, become a subscriber to In the No Trader, and we talk about this and have all our clients understand how these kind of market modifications work to better increase the odds that what you're seeing is a real move instead of a fake move. From a little bit longer term point of view, those are tactical numbers. If I switch to a weekly chart, the weekly chart doesn't break until you get under 39.56. And same thing, you would have to break 39.56 correctly. That's a couple hundred points off of the S&P high. And all that does is really bring you back to March level. So it's, you know, even if we get down to the mid 3900s, you haven't done huge damage to the market. Yeah, it's a couple hundred S&P points, which these days is 5%, but 5% is still not any big, you know, thing to be concerned about. And the market, you know, maybe just looking for an excuse right now, and rates, you know, not being able to climb back up over 1.6 may have some people thinking that you know, they can still head somewhat lower, and if they head lower, it may take the stock market with it right now. There's you know, there's kind of backwards thinking on certain ways of looking at the market. If yields move significantly higher, it's not good for technology stocks. If yields move lower, it's actually good for, you know, the growth type names, but not necessarily good for the rest of the market, which is what you've seen tech do rather well recently, after being, you know, topping several months ago in relative terms. Tech's actually had a decent time in the last week or two. So rates coming down is good for tech names. And tech is still the biggest part of the market. So you have to think about, too, when you look at the movement in the S&P, what pushes the S&P? Well, it's going to be the largest weighted sectors in the S&P. It's not going to be, you know, staples and energy, despite the fact that energy is by far the best performing sector this year. Energy only makes up 2.9% of the S&P's weighting.
Or so, meme stocks, right? It's not the meme stocks supporting it.
Yeah. I mean, BlackBerry getting squeezed is not going to, you know, make the S&P go higher. If Apple got squeezed, if Amazon got squeezed, yes, because they represent such a large weighting in the S&P. But these little names, you know, getting squeezed, Clovis, you know, getting pushed to $20 or 22, whatever it was a week ago, is not, and now it's down at like 12, is not going to affect the S&P. So, yeah, the meme stocks are not really putting, you know, any major effect on the market average.
All right, Rick, let's talk about the U.S. dollar and combine that with commodities, too, because commodities, they were one of the more volatile sectors, even heading into this week, at the start of this week, and really throughout this month, commodities have started to sell off. Now, big picture, that's after a pretty epic run in almost every commodity over the last year at different times, but the commodities are getting hit very hard on the back of, I guess, that Fed statement, or maybe it was just technically needed a bit of a correction here, although this is a very fast correction in something like gold. Balance that out with the U.S. dollar that also looks like it's put in a bottom and has started to head higher this week. How are you balancing the two here?
Yeah, so tactically, the dollar was due for a rally simply because in and around the 90 level in the dollar index continued to hold as support for a month, accompanied by multiple daily and weekly downside exhaustion signals. So, you know, I had told clients tactically, you probably want to be long the dollar. Strategically, I'm not sure you want to be long the dollar. It's, you know, right now with interest rates coming back down, the dollar's gotten some strength. when a market like the dollar, so we're talking the dollar in any related currency or any related market to the dollar, so that in many ways would be the precious metals, when they trade sideways for a month or more, you typically have a buildup. Think about what sideways market means. It means you have buyers and sellers coming together. There's a lot of liquidity, but the market's not moving. You know, it's trading in a range. When you get a market like that that trades in a very tight range like the dollar did, 50 pips either side of, let's say, 90 in the dollar index for a month or so, you've built up a lot of pressure. Think of it like a pot that's boiling and has a lid on it, and at some point the lid's going to blow. You often see these very swift moves occur as a news event or a perceived change in fundamentals occurs. And this is what you're seeing now in the dollar. The dollar index is at 92.20, so it's moved up 2 full points. That's a very significant move in a very short time. And that's what you're seeing. Gold, for instance, you know, gold's come off $100 in I think it's this week. That's a very significant move in a short time. So, you know, gold topped just over $1,900. If you move $100, that's over 5%. So it's a quick move fast. What happens is the people who have been in these tight trading ranges and created some of the open interest in the futures markets, you know, futures markets are very leveraged, often to the tune of 20 to 1. So if you're on the wrong side of that trade, as so many people are, as sideways patterns develop, you get a lot of people who are starting to lose money very quickly. And the loss of money forces them out, which forces others out. And you get these, you know, quick moves. And you're seeing that in the case of, you know, dollar-denominated things have become more expensive in the last week. And therefore, commodities generally, which are very dollar-sensitive, have come off hard. Look at what's happened to copper. Look at what's happened to lumber. The grains have come off very hard. Several were limit down. If I'm not mistaken, soybeans in the last couple of days removed, I think, the entire year's rally. So you know, things move very quickly as markets adjust. And the dollar strength here, to me, is tactically warranted. And we probably have some more room to go. And certainly I can make the case that we get back towards 93, which was the top of the range from early April. So we certainly could go there, if not even push through there to even squeeze more dollar shorts. And remember, the dollar made its low in the first week in January. And we've talked about this before, Corey. The entire street, from a strategic point of view, came into 2021 being bearish the dollar. And it basically made its low the first week of the month, of the year. And has not gotten down there since. It got close, you know, just in May, but we didn't make a new low. So the low of the year is from the first week in January, which means that every dollar shorts are basically on the wrong side of the market, and they're getting squeezed. And this is very reminiscent to 2017. So when Trump won the election in 2016, in November of 16, people got very bullish the dollar. And coming into 2017, just before he got inaugurated, there was a massive, in fact, the most one-sided bullish trade across the institutional marketplace was to be bullish the dollar coming into 2017. The dollar made its high the first day of 2017 and sold off the entire year. So far, this year is the exact opposite. The street was very bearish. If you looked at the strategists' calls for 2021, virtually everyone was bearish the dollar. Well, the dollar's made the low the first week of the year and has not been back. And, you know, you have the chance here for a bigger squeeze. Now, strategically, at some point, I'll be looking to sell into the rally. At this point, I could make the case for 93.76 in the U.S. dollar index as a place to potentially do that, which is slightly higher than the highs from early April, just to run stops above there too. But the street is wrong about the dollar right now. And if that's the case and the dollar continues higher, it's going to keep a lid on some of the commodities. So longer term, I still like gold. And I actually bought some gold yesterday for myself right around here, about 1775 or so. I bought the equivalent, you know, GLD when gold futures were down here. And just, I bought a little bit more. It wasn't a big position. But I've been building into gold for years. And, you know, I took a quick $100 pullback as an opportunity to buy a little more. But it's not something I expect to make money on overnight. Gold is, you know, still a partial hedge. These days, some people are using cryptos for that. If you want, we can talk about that in a second. But you've got to, if you have exposure to the commodity markets, which you do, by the way, if you're long energy names, right? So the question is, has crude oil put in a top at a little over $72 a barrel? You know, is that the near-term high as the dollar finds strength? And, you know, we're seeing now oil's up half a buck today at 71.30 or so. But oil has, you know, been moving up steadily all year. In fact, obviously, since last April, when it got to the ridiculous negative prices, oil's moved up. But you were at $40 oil last November, and you're at $70 oil now. Does this thing keep going and going, or will a rally in the dollar put a, you know, a lid on it for now? And I think it probably does. So I don't expect oil to make to go much higher. And if oil puts in a lid, then, you know, XOP, OIH, any of the oil-related names and mutual funds and ETFs are going to put, you know, have some type of lid on it. And it doesn't necessarily mean that Wednesday's high is the high for the move, but it's very possible that dollar strength is going to lead to some capping of what commodities can do. And, you know, we've seen it in the actual raw commodities, but now you might start seeing it in some of the energy-related stuff, despite the fact that energy is the best performer this year and will continue to be the best performer all year. And I have no doubt that the S&P Energy Index, which is up more than double any other index of the 11 macro sector indices this year, will continue throughout the balance of the year to be the best performing sector. Nothing's going to come close to energy this year in relative terms, but you still may have some downside exposure over the near term for, you know, a pullback in oil and commodities in general.
Okay. Interesting there, Rick. And big picture, I guess, circling back around to your first answer there in terms of the Fed downplaying inflation and the markets being ahead of the Fed and betting on inflation picking up, are we starting to see the opposite happen now with commodities moving down, dollar moving up, maybe the market saying that inflation trade, at least in the near term, has peaked?
I think for now, yes. And I think the markets were also way ahead of themselves, like on the commodity side, where prices have made, you know, price of corn, the price of basic commodities have made such a significant up move. And look, the price of lumber, and you can't, you know, there are a couple of very lightly traded ETFs that somewhat relate to the price of wood and lumber. The lumber futures market is very illiquid, and I don't recommend any of your clients trade it. Even professionals who trade it, there's too many locked limit days that happen in lumber. And it's because it's so thin, it hardly trades. The price of lumber got so high that it was actually pricing people out of being able to buy homes because the raw goods have started to make a material dent into builders' estimates on what new housing is going to cost, and it trickles down now to the buyers. So buyers have been forced out simply because home pricing, not only because of COVID in the suburbs, has gotten much more lofty as people wanted to leave the big cities and get into the suburbs, but also the price of new housing has gotten out of control because the raw prices of cement, copper, and lumber. I think the commodity side was overdone. You're seeing a correction, and the correction should likely last some more. So for the near term, yes, the inflation play is probably over. But I don't think it's done for good. I think it's just done for now. We should see inflation still creep in over time, and at some point, the U.S. 10-year is going to 2% and higher. And you know, it's the Fed's going to have a hard time dealing with inflation.
Fair. Well, they say it's still transitory, right? They're using that argument that don't worry about
yes.
it. No one knows for sure, but.
No, but even this, my son just got home for Father's Day from Ohio State, where he graduated, but he's staying for grad school. And he just got home. I haven't seen him in months, and it was great seeing him. And he was telling me that he's seeing a big difference in the price of his grocery shopping. And, you know, he's a 22-year-old who is a young adult and first, you know, starting to now be on his own and shop for himself and you know, pay for his own things. And when you're a kid, you don't realize this. But now that, you know, he's, as a young adult, doing his own shopping and seeing that, he said, even the price of salmon, he said he normally buys salmon for, you know, I don't know, $8 a pound, and now he's paying $12 a pound for the same thing. And I said, boy, that's a big, you know, inflation's up, but and causing prices higher in the supermarket, but that sounds like a little too much of a, you know, that's a 50% move per pound. But it is creeping into, you know, your food bill. And you go to restaurants, their costs between COVID and their raw costs have gone up, and they're passing them on as they need to. Inflation is here. You're not going to see restaurants and supermarkets lower their prices. So unfortunately, I think for the consumer, it may not be in the markets, and we'll see a correction in the markets. But on the consumer end, other than the possibility that gasoline could come down, you know, if oil fell from 70 to 60, you should see your gasoline get a little cheaper. But other than that, I think for the consumer, once inflation creeps into the environment, it shows up in prices, and the consumer's on the short end of the stick here, because people are, you know, suppliers are not likely to lower prices. If yields go from, you know, from what was as high as 1.75 and get down to, let's just say they went to even 1.25, you're not going to see that correction show up as in the consumer side and not pay any less. If prices have moved up, they're going to stay there. And only over time will they go higher. They're not going to come back down.
Fair enough, Rick. It's an interesting market out there, isn't it? And everybody had their eye on the Fed, and the Fed really didn't do much, but boy, oh boy,
no, they really didn't.
Reaction.
And that's the thing. They really didn't do much, Corey. They did a smart job at how they presented this. No changes now, nothing for maybe 2 years, and the market's getting spooked on something that may or may not be 2 years down the road. I think, if anything, it was the reaction to them saying, oh, yeah, there's like almost a full percent more of inflation than we thought there'd be.
Yeah, finally, admitting that aspect of it, right? But the Fed's been wanting higher inflation, but that's just how wild and crazy these markets are. But again, the Fed, whether you like it or not, carries a heavy hand in the market. And they even said they're going to talk the markets to death even before making a policy decision. So, hey, here's the start of it, I guess. Rick, we're out of time, buddy. It's great having you on the show. Thank you very much for taking time on this weekend show. I'll have you back on in probably a month's
My
time,
pleasure.
And we'll recap everything and any other changes that we're seeing. But this month, June, has been a pretty, I think, key reversal month for such things as the dollar and commodities. Rick, thanks as always for your time, buddy. Have a great rest of your weekend.
You too, Corey. Thanks for having me.